Hey, guess what? The 2025 Writing Excuses Cruise is over 50% sold out. During this week-long masterclass, I'm going to be leading writers like yourself through a series of workshops designed to give you the tools to take your writing to the next level. Space is limited, but there is still time to secure your spot. We're going to be sailing out of Los Angeles from September 18th through 26th. Regardless of where you are in your writing journey, this event is your opportunity to learn new skills while exploring the beautiful Mexican Riviera. Whether you're revising a story, reworking a character arc, or revitalizing your plot, you'll leave more confident in your current story and bolstered by a new set of friends. Join us on board at writingexcuses.com/retreats.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 15. This is Writing Excuses.
Third person, omniscient.
She's Mary Robinette Kowal.
They're Dong Wan Song.
He's Dan.
She's Aaron.
I'm confused.
We are continuing our section talking about proximity. We're talking about how close the perspective is to the characters of your story. And we are finally to my favorite of these, which is third person omniscient. I love omniscient because I feel like it gives the author so many tools to play with as they are telling the story that they want to tell. I think there has been a real drive in the past few decades of getting closer and closer and closer to the character, getting that perspective really locked into the character's emotions and interiority. There's been a real drive towards first person. I was talking last time about there's sort of a default towards, you know, close limited. But I do love it when we get to step back, zoom out, see what everything's happening in the room, find out what's happening next door. What are the neighbors having for dinner? What's, you know, Joe down the street thinking? What's the gas station attendant thinking? You know, like being able to get the broadest perspective of what everyone is experiencing in the moment, to me, can sometimes be such a rich and thrilling and exciting narrative experience.
One of my favorite examples of third person omniscient as a tool that is doing a thing that no other POV / proximity tool could do is the very short chapter in Act 3 of Tom Clancy's, I think it's Sum of All Fears, where a nuclear device is detonated in a football stadium. And the chapter is called Three Shakes. And we step into omniscient and we describe the quantum effects, the particle effects, the EMP effects, because part of what happens is the blast hits, the electromagnetic blast hits TV antennas, satellite antennas from trucks, and results in shorting a satellite out in orbit. And he describes all of the electronics of that happening. And you know what? There isn't a single character on scene for whose point of view that works, because they're all dead.
That's the thing, is you can do so many things with omniscient that you can't do if you're limiting yourself to a character who's in the scene. You can get into the subatomics, right? You can get into, you know, spaces where no people are, or get into the heads of people that your protagonist doesn't have access to, like the villain characters, like side characters. But because of the free range you have, I also think that third-person omniscient is the most difficult of these sort of three basic ones we're talking about. Like first-person, third limited, those and third omniscient are like the three most common that you see. I do think third omniscient is one to be deployed very carefully. So for you guys, what are the pitfalls? Like when have you tried this and how has it worked out for you?
For me, I'm not actually sure that I've tried to write anything on omniscient.
It's pretty rare.
For me, I haven't had a story yet where I have felt like I needed that extra, extra distance. I think about novels like John Scalzi's Collapsing Empire when we're looking at a more contemporary example of this, or Dune, where, you know, it's trying to look at these very, very broad things. But then I'm also thinking about like Liza Palmer's Family Reservations, which is, again, a more contemporary example of, it just came out last year, of third-person omniscient. And what all of those are doing for me is that they're dealing with big, complex interdynamics where you're jumping. And I just haven't written that kind of story yet where I'm dealing with that sort of complex relationship dynamics, whether it's empire spanning or family spanning. So I don't think I've used omniscient yet.
Back in 2008, during the very first season of Writing Excuses, there was an episode which was particularly memorable for me because it's one in which we were talking about these tools and I knew what exactly zero of the terms meant. And that was a good time. That was very much Howard. It gets to be the every person character who is educated at a much faster rate than any of the listeners could hope to be educated. But it's the point at which I learned that the POV that I was usually writing in for Schlock Mercenary is what we call third person cinematic, because we're not looking inside people's heads and we're not following a character around so much as we are following a camera. But the existence of the narrator, who would often express an opinion or state a fact, or there would be footnotes, meant that I was doing third-person cinematic with dips into and out of omniscient. And, I mean, in 2008, I was doing, I think, a pretty good job of writing and illustrating Schlock Mercenary. But once I had names for these tools, once I knew what I was doing, it's not that I knew what I was doing. Once I knew the name for what I was doing, I was able to start figuring out what I was doing and how to switch. I guess I wrote third person omniscient for close to 20 years on and off. Recently, I've sat down and tried to play with it as a tool, and I'm realizing, this is not as easy as it was when I was drawing pictures.
I think I've only written omniscient once, and it was in what was essentially a prologue, the third Zero G book. The plot hinges on a bunch of 9-year-olds, because it's middle grade, understanding how extremely fast travel works, because, you know, we already learned in book one that it took almost 100 years of travel for the spaceship to get from Earth to this other planet. And then I needed them to understand that another ship left later but got there first. And so the prologue is essentially kind of like Howard was saying with the Tom Clancy stuff. It's a scientific explanation of how the speed of light works and how extremely fast travel works. And there is no perspective. There is no character that we're getting that from. But it had to be there. Now, you asked about what are the pitfalls of this. One of the major pitfalls of this was trying to write this without it sounding didactic. Trying to write this in a way that sounded like it was part of the book. Every writing group that I ran this through, which I guess was only two, but two writing groups completely rejected it at first. Because, like you said, third person limited was and is kind of a default for a lot of people. And so getting this scene that's just, let me give you a textbook first, that's aimed at 9-year-olds to explain what FTL is, really kind of didn't sit right with them. And I had to fine tune it a lot before readers were able to kind of accept that it should exist.
So I was, you know, when you initially asked the question, I was like, oh, I've never done that. And then I realized I did it a ton actually recently. So <Yep. laughs> I wrote a series of posts. This is an interesting sort of, to give a little context. So for Pathfinder, for Paizo, for the Pathfinder setting, I wrote a series of short fiction pieces about the deaths of various gods. They were setting up for an actual god dying in their world. So I got to write a bunch of what if stories of like, what if this other god died? What if this third god died? And all of them are as if it was like a seer saw the future and was like, so it's like an omniscient unnamed seer is like, here's what happens when the god of farming dies. And so for each one, I wrote like about the specific death and then the implications for the world. So I was going to like what actually happens in the death scene and then looking at, you know, this other character is affected this way and it makes all the crops die and this other thing happens. And so it was a bunch of very small things for different characters and it was all omniscient. But what it makes me think of is two things. One is like, I was thinking about this earlier with that Tom Clancy example, is that a lot of times omniscient is the perspective of the world. And the reason like that it can be used, there are many reasons to use it, but I love it when it feels like this is the world telling a story and the world is bigger than the people in it. And so one person cannot contain the world. It's only by looking at multiple people and the spaces in between people that you can really understand what the world is doing. I think one of the first times I remember seeing it is in the Wheel of Time book openings. Yes. There's always that section that's like,
the wheel turns.
The wheel turns and a whole bunch of people like, here's this farmer and he's affected and here's this whatever. Yeah. And they're affected to give you a, here's a state of the world as of, you know, we've been following these characters that shape the world, but to remind you, here's how the world is affected and here's how ordinary citizens are seeing their lives change as a result of everything that's happening. And then, but how to like then make it, you know, interesting is something I thought about is for each god, like they have a specific domain. And I actually tried to let that change the rhythm and style of what I was doing. When I talked about the god of hunts being hunted, I went for shorter, more like reporting on like, this is happening, that is happening, the way you would in a hunt or a fight scene almost, but like the world is fighting. When it was the goddess of beauty, I went for longer sentences that had like a longer cadence, like the soft feel of beauty. And so that way the world changes and the world's perspective changes and it changes the way that I was able to use omniscient in those pieces.
I do think that's like one of the pitfalls of omniscient is that people think that just because you're zoomed out, you lose the voiciness. You can still be as voicey in omniscient as you can be in close limited. And I want to talk more about that and the use cases for it. But before then, listeners around the world looked at their podcast apps and realized it was about time for a break.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about the cases where we've tried to use omniscient in the past. You know, for me, I think those are often very cinematic moments, like Howard is talking about, in terms of like, I think of like disaster movies where like you suddenly see the asteroids falling from, you know, a dozen perspectives of people who are about to die in a variety of ways that you have met for 5 seconds, right? when it comes to these scenes, you know, we talked a little bit about head hopping in the third person limited episode. But what are the things that you find yourself needing to do when you reach for omniscient to keep it from being unmoored, from keeping it from being overwhelming either to you or to the reader?
So I can really only speak about it from a reader's perspective at this point, but I love reading omniscient. Mm-hmm. What I find when I'm reading omniscient is that I'm given direction about where I'm headed, so that I don't just arrive in a character's head. There's narration that precedes that, that then drops me into the character's head. So the narrator, the author is directing my attention. So I'm already focused on them, and then I get their thoughts. So it's like it is that zooming in and then zooming back out again. Without that signposting, that's where I think we get to the flaw of head hopping, which is I suddenly have someone's thought and I don't know who it belongs to. Mm-hmm. I thought I was with this person, but now I'm over here and I didn't see it coming. That's for me where it falls apart when I'm reading it in student work. But when I'm reading like Jane Austen, you know, she's extremely good at directing my attention. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite works are also things where sometimes there's not a character on stage. Douglas Adams does a really great job of this with Hitchhiker's Guide. It's like, this is where we're headed right now. Now we're going to spend a little bit of time in this person's head, and then we're going to come back and talk about Babelfish.
Humor is one of the places we see omniscient the most, actually, because Pratchett uses third-person omniscient all the time, where you kind of need to step back and point out the grand irony of whatever's happening here. So, you know, I mean, it makes sense that you're using it for Schlock, both because it was a comic, but also it's very much the humorist voice is that omniscient voice.
Yeah, I often think of it as like being in a car with somebody and they don't signal when they change lanes. Mm-hmm. You can get away with that once or twice, but if you're constantly going, someone's going to be like, are you okay? Do I need to take the wheel from you? But like a good driver, even if it's just for a moment, even if it's maybe it's sometimes it's a really, really explicit signal. They actually like put on the signal light. Sometimes it's the way they look over. If you see them and you're in the car, you're like, oh, okay, I understand what you were doing there. And so I think it's figuring out how are you signaling to the reader that the change is happening, so that if you do change without a signal, there's a reason for it. Like, oh, we were about to hit a boulder, and then it makes sense to them for the reasons that you were doing it.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made, yes, for creating without deliberation or conscious access to the tools you're using. But that is not the way I prefer to make art. I always like to deliberately deploy the tools. If I'm going to signal a turn with just my head, I'm going to know that I'm doing that before actually doing it. And I, for the record, I always use my turn signals. I don't just use my head because I don't want to be hit by another car. And
I'm just
always
sticking your head out the window of the car.
Hello, moving everybody. We've got somebody. Someone that we knew in Chicago. My husband was like, "What is it with Chicago drivers that they don't use their turn signals?" And this person replied, "I ain't giving nothing away for free." But I do feel like sometimes we see that with writers that they'll think, "Oh, the reader has to work for it." That they won't give information because they feel like somehow it cheapens the experience, which I do not understand.
I think it's the same reason that sometimes people feel like everything that happens in the story has to be a surprise. Mm-hmm. Like holding back the twist is where the power is, because I think it's like once readers realize that like I've done something really clever or I surprise them, they will value it more. But in truth, a lot of times the twist you can see coming, the car wreck in slow motion, so to speak, is actually really compelling, because it's like, you know, it's there and yet they don't avoid it. And it really draws the eye in a way that I think people don't realize sometimes.
Yeah, that calls to mind what's actually one of my very favorite uses of third person omniscient, which there's a scene in The Lions of Al-Rassan by Guy Gavriel K, where a huge disaster has just happened. A character has just died, but we don't know which one. We know that there were three main characters present and some horrible thing happened. And I can't remember what the horrible thing was, But before he tells us who died, he goes and checks in with every single other character in the story. All of the side characters, some random people, and is very slowly kind of circling in. And I do believe that he uses line breaks every time he jumps ahead, which is...
I don't think, because he may not. Carry on.
Yeah.
But it felt like he did because of how clear it was.
Yeah. He made it very clear every time he came into a new perspective. And so whether or not it looks like limited, he was very clearly doing an omniscient thing of just making sure that we got this character's reaction to the big disaster and then move on to the next one. And part of the effect of clearly signposting which head we're in is that we are in our own heads, we're mentally checking off, okay, this person's safe. Okay, this person's safe. And then by the time we finally get into that, you know, we get the perspective of the two or three characters that were actually present and we learn who dies, is devastating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very good at using that. There's in, I think it's Tigana, he has this scene where someone dies with an arrow from an arrow and we see the scene and then he effortlessly takes us back in time to someone who had been to how the shot was fired and to who it was, who fired and how it happened. And that's, I think one of the other things that you can do with omniscient is we've been talking about moving from person to person, but I think you can also move us around in time in ways that are significantly easier than when you're trying to do third, where you have just like, okay, here's a line break and here's a header. It's like 7 months previously.
I mean, that's what's so exciting about our mission is the range of possibility is just vast, right? Because you can, I've seen people just like dip back into, we're going to talk about the creation of the universe for a second now. You know what I mean? And like, that can be such an exciting narrative move because it allows you to build momentum, allows you to set things up, it allows you to put things in context in all kinds of different ways.
One of my favorite bits of my own work is the beginning of book 20, which is called Time for a Brief History, which is, a play on the Stephen Hawking. I'm gonna read it very briefly. A little under 14 billion years ago, there was nothing. That early nothing is surprisingly difficult to draw. Not drawing anything is easy, but these blank panels upon which the lazy, lazy artist hasn't expended any effort still occupy space and still experience time. The nothing at the beginning of the universe did neither of those things. In point of fact, it only did what it was, nothing. Until suddenly it didn't. It was so much fun to write that, and it's an omniscient voice, but it's an omniscient voice that has voice. It has an opinion.
Exactly.
It sets a tone for the book, it sets a tone for the story, and it tells you what you're headed for.
It also has a very clear relationship with the reader, which is, I think, one of the other things that omniscient can do that you get in first person. But omniscient can reference the fact that it is a story in ways that are like that third person limited. Fundamentally, you can technically, I do this at the beginning of Shades of Milk and Honey because I start with this voice driven opening, you know, since we're quoting work, the Ellsworths of Long Park Mead had the regard of their neighbors in every respect. It's like this is this very, very distant thing. And then I come into one character, which is the Honorable Sir Charles Ellsworth. But then the rest of the series is Jane. Mm-hmm. It's the only spot that I pull way back like that. And I use that a little bit at the beginning of the others because I'm trying to do the Austenian nod. But I never do the omniscient thing that Austen does. But it is that it is offering the reader that, hello, here is our relationship. Mm-hmm.
The thing that keeps coming into my mind as I'm listening to all this is this phrase, like, even God has intentions. And in some ways, God has to have more. And so, you know, one of the things you'll hear when people like are inventing things are that constraint actually helps creativity because you can't do everything. And so it helps you to like focus in on the things you can do. And I think that gets back to what you're saying about why omniscient can be so tricky is you can do anything. And so how do you know what you want to do? And so I think one of the things if you're writing omniscient is to think about what is the intention of what you're doing. As all, if you were reading your lovely works, like you had a really, you both had really clear and very different intentions in mind. And the circling in of the people that died, like there's a very clear intention there of what then omniscient is on the page to convey to the reader.
It makes me realize that I think that part of the reason I've never written omniscient for anything, you know, besides the like barest touch of it at the beginning of a book, is the paralysis of choice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's so many choices that like, I don't even know. I also have not had a work that needed it, but I've been sitting here as we've been podcasting thinking, maybe I should try omniscient. And the thought of trying it fills me with such existential dread. Because I'm like, there are so many more choices that are available to you that you now have to make.
Yeah,
that's what I'm struggling with in the omniscient work in progress right now. And I identified it almost immediately. I was like, oh, this is paralysis of choice. Okay, well, I choose to come back to this later.
Well, as the omniscient narrator of this particular episode, unfortunately, we are out of time, and I'm going to take us to our homework. So what I would like you to do is to describe a street scene. I want to have you describe a scene where your main character is walking down a street, and I want you to move us through that scene of the character moving through this street scene through the perspective of 5 to 6 bystanders observing this happening. Focus on sensory details. What is everybody seeing? And how are you? Can you use that to say, oh, the smell of this, the sound of that, the look of that is establishing where your main character is in the scene and be clear about whose perspective are we seeing this from?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.